This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
You know, this has got to be the smallest workshop here, and I'm totally fine with that. For that reason, we're going to keep it pretty informal and low-key. I'm going to ask you two back here to just come sit up on the couches up here. We're just going to make a circle and... this is no highfalutin presentation. We're just going to sit together and talk about maintenance. How's that? I work at Faith Builders, and supervising the maintenance there is one thing that I do. I actually help with it some. Probably, I don't know, 10 to 20% of my time, I'm actually getting my hands on things. But I do have a full-time maintenance worker that does most of it, and I simply give that person direction on a daily basis. Been doing that for 7 years. Before I worked at Faith Builders, I was at SMBI for about 2 years and also did kind of the same thing there. I didn't do the maintenance, but I gave direction to the maintenance person. And before that, I worked at a family business where my full-time job was maintenance. So I kind of got maintenance in my blood. And gives you a little bit of background, my interest and experience in maintenance work. Let me just give you an overview of what I want to do in this workshop here. I'm going to make a few introductory comments about just the idea of doing maintenance, and particularly in the context of missions. And after that, I want each of you to just briefly introduce yourselves. We're a small enough group here, we can each say who we are and maybe what organization you're connected with, if you are connected with one, and what you do there. One thing I wasn't sure in planning this workshop, if I'm going to be talking to an audience of maintenance supervisors or maintenance workers, because there is a difference in how you approach the subject. So I'm interested in knowing that from you when you introduce yourselves. And then I have a handout for you, and I'm going to go over 9 tips for effective facility maintenance, and we'll do that after we do the introductions. So. The first thing I want to say but as I introduce this topic is that maintenance really is a hands-on way to serve the Lord. It is. I find a lot of fulfillment in unclogging toilets. Now, not really when I'm doing it. Maintenance can be frustrating and stressful work. But there's something about just helping people with the simple everyday things of life, the hands-on things, that feels to me like serving Christ. It's not all that intellectual. It's not philosophical. It's just practical needs that that maintenance takes care of. I don't think I need to tell you that doing maintenance well in a mission setting, when you have a compound or a facility is crucial to helping that mission do its job. If there's the converse of that would be that all kinds of maintenance problems will interfere with a mission doing its job, and so that's why this kind of thing is important. So whether you're from a boys' camp or a nursing home or maybe a counseling center, if the maintenance is going, if things are well maintained, then counseling can happen. Then children can be cared for, okay? And when it's not happening well, there's interferences in that. Staff are having problems, they're getting frustrating, they can't do their job. Now, I need to correct a fallacy here that often enters our minds when we think about maintenance, is that in a mission, let's just, for an example, use a counseling center. Say this counseling center has 6 counselors and 1 maintenance man. It's tempting in that kind of context to think of the counselors as the ones that are helping people, working with people, and the maintenance man is the one that's working with stuff, things, not people. Well, I want to clarify from the beginning here that maintenance work is helping people, okay? And if you believe that, and if you think of it that way, you will do a better job of it. And your organization will feel it. They'll notice the difference. Okay, maintenance man keeps people safe. He maintains the smoke detectors. He puts salt on the sidewalks when it's icy. He does all kinds of things that keep people safe. That's taking care of people. He keeps them comfortable. When the furnace doesn't work, he's the first responder. When the water pipe breaks, He keeps people comfortable. The maintenance man keeps people productive. So when something doesn't work, the work can't go on until it's fixed. Okay? So the oven in the kitchen shuts down. It's 1 hour before supper. If we're going to be productive, that thing needs to work. Okay? So think of maintenance actually as helping people. It really is. It's helping both the workers and perhaps the people being served in your mission. One other thing that I think is important about doing your best with maintenance is that a well-maintained facility builds trust with your supporters. Think about your facility as I try to think of our facility as not belonging to Faith Builders. It's real property that belongs to all the people that support Faith Builders. It belongs to our board and all of the churches that they represent. And so I'm taking care of it. I'm a steward, okay? So when they come to visit, and if they see things are unkempt, falling apart, in disrepair, I'm not taking very good care of their things. You see how I'm thinking about that? But when they come and things are neat and orderly, everything's running normally, they can see that people are taking care of it. They feel like Faith Builders is doing a stewardly job of taking care of the things that they actually purchased. And so a well-maintained facility actually encourages support from your supporters and trust. And I think that's very important for missions to be able to go on. So that's my introduction to this whole idea of maintenance. Hopefully that's got you thinking about your connection with this subject and how that applies to you. So I'd just like to have some introductions now. I'll start over on this side. Say who you are, your connection with whatever organization or mission, and what you do. I want to know your role. How are you involved with the maintenance? Do you supervise it? Do you actually do the work? Go ahead.
My name is Tim Stolzfus.
Okay.
I am involved in maintenance. Currently, I'm a maintenance supervisor at a feed mill.
Okay.
But I also get involved personally in that as needed.
Mm-hmm.
On call 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I've supervised maintenance at a furniture company and a fabrication company.
Okay.
I am involved some with a small mission in Cambodia.
Uh-huh.
And that I started out as treasurer with that project. So that's kind of my interest in certainly the newfound focus or more recent, just in the last few years. Also involved in very preliminary at this point in starting a medical clinic for self-pay. Serving people in our community.
I see. Very interesting. So at the feed mill, are you the only maintenance worker, or do you have a crew? Or more than one person?
I have one full-time guy and then another guy that's available as needed.
Mm-hmm. And you try to keep things organized?
It's my job to keep everything on schedule.
Yeah.
And
okay.
And definitely relate to maintenance and productivity. And I like all right. well-oiled
yeah.
machines.
Yeah. Your job is more in the realm of business at this point, but hopefully some of what I'm talking about in terms of nonprofits or missions can apply. Yeah. And I'm sure you probably have some tips for me. I should have mentioned that there's a good chance some of you may have more maintenance experience than I do. So we want to learn from each other. Let's keep going down the line.
My name is Ray Yutzi, and my title is administrator at Penn Valley Christian Retreat.
Oh, okay.
And yes, I'm directly involved with the maintenance too, because I have two guys on staff, and it's my job to keep them busy and give them direction and so forth, and I do get actively involved.
Good.
More probably than I really want to.
You have to juggle a lot of different things, I'm sure.
And a lot of that depends on the abilities and the knowledge of the ESSER that I have at the time.
Yeah, good. All right. Okay, next.
I'm Roland Yoder and serve at Fresh Start Training Center.
Okay.
And serve as assistant administrator.
Uh-huh.
And I would take care of the what I would consider more the technical maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Have guys that kind of carry out some of the general everyday
mm-hmm.
for me, whether it's through the shop program or mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. The comfortability, productivity stays yeah. up to par.
Yeah, good. Sounds like your role is very similar to mine. I'm not the head administrator, and I do actually some of the work, but I tend to do the more technical things that maybe, you know, volunteers can't do. Or mm-hmm. yeah. Good. Interesting. Next.
I'm Gaylord Knapp. I'm with New Horizons Ministries from Colorado.
Oh, okay.
Actually the chief financial officer
of okay.
the organization. We had spent 22 years with Northern Youth Programs in Canada, and a large portion of that time I was maintenance supervisor and maintenance.
Okay.
And have had a lot of history with, mm-hmm. with maintenance, and that's really kind of a lot of ways maybe where my heart is at. Mm-hmm. Yet. I did a maintenance program that's very important to the ministry. Presently, it's what I'm doing now is more if it costs dollars or bigger dollars, you know, I get involved
uh-huh.
and okay it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of probably the thing that I enjoy the most is troubleshooting.
Okay.
And uh-huh. when there's something that got somebody stumped, I like to weigh in on it
yeah. and try to figure out what's going on and what to do about it.
Uh-huh. Also, probably my history, it seemed like a lot of our maintenance budget is, you know, we kind of often run a day late and a dollar short, and how to use creativity and mm-hmm. in still getting the job done without mm-hmm. spending big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's amazing how often you can come up with getting the final product done, maybe without spending
mm-hmm.
a big money, going renting expensive machinery, or mm-hmm. you know, it kind yeah. of goes on and on.
Yeah,
and,
have to be creative.
Yeah.
Good, very good. All right, next.
My name is Peace Boyson, and recently, well, it's back in January, 6 months before that, I was in near Lima, Peru, helping with the literature ministry.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, just doing a lot of maintenance type stuff, and saw this, I thought it'd be good to learn more about it, because I had a lot of times I felt like I was so running behind schedule
uh-huh.
and all that kind of
uh-huh.
efficiency and
mm-hmm.
stuff that I need to work on.
Okay.
But, you know, looking at possibly going back there, so mm-hmm. it's good.
Good. All right. Well, thank you for introducing yourselves. That helps me to know kind of where we're headed here. What are we doing for time by now, Matt? 40 minutes yet. Okay. Good. I'm going to give you a handout here and explain it once everybody has a copy. Try to keep this very simple. These are just my tips. I just try to think of different things that I've learned along the way that I think make things go smoother for me. I don't have time to just get into a lot of depth on any one of these points, but I'm going to try to explain them and from my point of view, and then hopefully at the end we can have a little bit of Q&A. So if there's one of these that particularly stands out to you and we want to go deeper on, you can ask that later. Okay? So I'm just going to dive right into this and explain them one at a time. First of all, develop a system for handling alerts and requests. This is so critical if you're going to do maintenance at a place. You need to find a way to get the need to the person that needs to do something about it. And if you work in an organization like Faith Builders that has a lot of people working and we have students there, whether you're their counselees or children or whoever you're caring for, these are the people that probably first notice a maintenance problem. So it's not like your maintenance worker can be everywhere at once. You need to find a way that anybody in the organization can let the maintenance man know. Now, I don't know how you do it at your place, whether anybody just knows the maintenance man's phone number and notice if the pipe is leaking or a furnace doesn't work or something, and they call him up. It can be done that way, but I recommend that you have something more than that. And there's a reason for that, and that is that you'll have just a wide range of requests. Some things are very urgent. They need attention immediately. For that, the telephone works pretty good. But some are not. Some are just these little niggling things that somebody notices. A door hinge squeaks a little bit. Should get some attention. Doesn't have to be today. It can be tomorrow. But if they don't have a place to record that or notify somebody to record it, it's going to be forgotten. And then it's going to go on and on and on. And then, of course, there are other things that should be done routinely that should be on a list. So I'm suggesting that somehow, some way, you have a list, and probably some of you do. At the one place where I used to work, it was just simply a clipboard. It was like a chart. It had a place for a column for a description, the name of the person putting the request on there, and maybe some room for a deadline if there was it needed to be done by such and such. And that clipboard hung at a well-known spot in the middle of the warehouse. And all the employees knew if you saw a maintenance problem somewhere, you go write it on there. And then Sheldon's going to come around and check that thing several times a day. And if he sees your name on it, has a question about what you put on, he'll come talk to you. He might go right to it because he knows what you're talking about. So it can be very simple. Now, at Faith Builders, we have a much more complex system. Since we're a school and most of our staff have a computer or work at a desk, we have a computer-based system. We call it the Maintenance Toolkit. It's software by Microsoft SharePoint, I think it's called. And it enables any staff to go on the network, open a little ticket that basically they type in a description of the problem and save it, and then that goes to my desk, to my computer. I get a little alert whenever one comes in. I can also see a tally list of everything that has come in. I can organize it by marking a priority for it. My maintenance man can also access it, and he can mark things done when he finishes them, and then I see it. So it's a lot more complex. And I'm just saying, I'm not sure, but that's not the thing for every organization. But simple or complex, you need to develop a system for handling alerts and requests. Don't just let it be something in the back of somebody. It can't be just a list in somebody's mind. It'll be too disorganized then. I also recommended that you use such a list daily, that both the maintenance worker and the maintenance supervisor, if applicable, should look at that list first thing in the morning and probably several times a day. And there probably ought to be some kind of dialogue between the supervisor and the worker about that list, because your worker will need help deciding maybe what to do about certain things or what the priority should be. So think of this system, whether it's a clipboard or a computer-based system or something else you've developed, as kind of a way to give the maintenance man more eyes and ears across your whole facility to know what's going on and what needs help, what needs work. And I would highly recommend that list, however you use it, should at least have a brief description of the problem or the maintenance issue, and it should have the person's name requesting it, because then the maintenance man can go to that person and talk with them more if there's specific information that they need. It should also have a way to let the maintenance man know what kind of priority or urgency is attached to this, or if there's a deadline. There may be more things you could put on there as well, but that's probably the most important things. So that's my first tip. Develop a system, use it daily. It's going to help you keep things organized, help you prioritize things, help the maintenance man to have lots of eyes and ears to know what's going on and what needs to be done. Secondly, and this is a very important one, it reflects back on what I just said, manage routine or preventative and incidental or reactive tasks separately. There really are kinds of categories in maintenance jobs, and it helps to think of in terms of categories. Some things are incidental, they just happen. The toilet plugs, the pipe breaks, those are not things that you can schedule on a routine basis. Okay, even light bulbs. You know, you can schedule going through the whole building and looking for bulbs that are out, but you can't, you're not going to, on a monthly basis, just change all the bulbs whether they need it or not. You know, that would keep them from blowing, but that's not the right way to do things. So a bulb blows when it blows. Okay, that's incidental. That's reactive maintenance. Something happens, maintenance man reacts to it, okay? But there's another, excuse me, there's another kind of maintenance called preventative or routine. It's things that you actually can schedule. Vehicle service is a prime example of this. See, if you wouldn't change the oil in the pickup truck regularly, you would soon have some reactive maintenance to do, okay? And preventative maintenance prevents a lot of reactive maintenance. But it can only be applied to certain things, not everything. So back to this list or this system I talked about first. At Faith Builders, we actually have two lists. One we call the routine list, and that has a whole list of things that can be done fairly on regular intervals. And we have that routine list broken into, I have a copy of the current one here. We have it broken into monthly tasks, quarterly tasks, twice yearly, and yearly. Okay, so things that are on, just for some examples, things that are on the monthly list: change the well water filter cartridge, buff the west wing hallways, delime the dishwasher. Quarterly things are like clean the kitchen hood louvers, check the vacuum canister to see if it, the central vac to see if it needs emptied, change furnace filters. That's another good routine one that should be done regularly, at least checked. What we do is we check the filter. If it's dirty, we replace it. But sometimes, depending on the use of that furnace, it's clean, stick it back in. But at least quarterly, we're checking them. Okay. Some of these things, if you're not sure how often you need to do something, at least get it on the list. You'll soon figure out. We started out with monthly furnace filters because that's usually what manufacturers recommend. But we quickly figured out it doesn't need to be done that often for our furnaces. So we do it quarterly. Okay. So work on this thing that I call a routine list. All right, and keep it separately from the incidental list. The maintenance man needs to do both, but there needs to be a good amount of attention put toward this preventative maintenance, because it often, if you run a more disorganized and kind of spur of the moment, always falling behind kind of maintenance department, this is going to get neglected. It's going to tend to get neglected, and you'll pay for it in the long run. So as a supervisor, I have to pay attention to, once a month at least, I look at this routine list. And one thing a routine list should always have is a date marked when it was done last. Okay? Our computer-based list is really handy because it keeps them in order with the most recent one at the bottom of the list. So if I quickly look at the monthly list at a glance, the one that's going to be due next is at the top of the list. Okay, so looking at this one right now, the well water filter cartridge is due, actually, it's due already. So whenever I glance at the list, I look at the ones at the top because they're the ones that are going to be most likely to be due. Okay, so if you're going to have effective maintenance, you have to think in terms of two different kinds of maintenance. There's reactive maintenance. You need to do that well. Don't neglect that. That actually is priority maintenance. You can't spend all your time changing oil and furnace filters and neglect the pipe that's leaking, okay? But in the process of doing all this reactive maintenance, find a way to organize some routine things. And you'll actually find that if you do a good job on the routine list, your reactive maintenance list gets smaller. That's the way it should work. All right, the third tip. Don't let your maintenance man hoe his own row. Now, this I'm talking to supervisors here. Sometimes it's a problem in particularly small organizations that are just getting started just to have a one-man maintenance department, and he kind of, as long as he knows what he's doing and doesn't make a fuss, he kind of throughout the day in the routine schedule of the organization, he kind of gets up in the morning, goes to work, and does his own thing all day long, and doesn't have a lot of interaction with the other staff or maybe even with administration, and especially, like I said, if he's responsible and doesn't make a fuss, people can almost kind of ignore this person. I'm just suggesting that's not a very good thing. It's not good to have an autonomous maintenance man. The maintenance man really should have a supervisor or someone in administration or management that they are connected with. And it actually goes back to some of the things I said about maintenance being integral to the mission of the organization. If he's hoeing his own row, he's going to be thinking strictly in terms of maintenance priority, not organizational priority. See, sometimes I have to tell my maintenance man, don't do that because these people over here don't really need that done today, but these people over here really need this job done today. See, he's not going to intuitively know that because he's not tied into the workings of the organization. Okay? He's just thinking in terms of fixing things. All right? So here's that's one real reason why the maintenance man needs to be connected. I meet with my maintenance man just for 10 minutes every morning, a really quick meeting. It doesn't take much of my time. We quickly pull up this list. We look over it. I mark a couple of things and say, look, I think you should do this first. And by the way, in the afternoon, after school lets out, is a good chance to get in there and do those hallways because you won't be disturbing anybody. See, I'm helping him think about how he does his maintenance so it actually jives with what the organization is doing. And when he knows that, and when he feels that, when we work together that way, he feels more a part of the big picture of what we're doing and feels more fulfilled about his maintenance work. So don't let your maintenance man hoe his own row. When the maintenance man is connected with administration or some kind of a manager that has a bigger picture of what's going on, he'll understand better what's most important. He won't waste time on pet projects. Sometimes you have these organizations where the maintenance man is this tinkerer. He's really good at fixing things, but he'll spend hours down in the shop, overhauling the engine on the old Ford pickup truck when nobody else in the organization even cares about the old Ford pickup truck. They would rather have other things being done, but he's autonomous. He's doing his own thing. All right. It prevents that kind of thing from happening. It helps them feel more integral to the mission of the org. And also, it's good if the maintenance man senses a certain order or strategy about the way his work is done, rather than it's just this helter-skelter bounce back and forth between urgent requests and try to keep my head together. Okay, there's somebody actually trying to make sure my daily work is semi-orderly. That's a big advantage. So I encourage you, those of you that manage a maintenance person, have daily contact with them. Help them think about task priority. What's most important for the organization to have done today? And also, another reason why he can't hoe his own row is sometimes a maintenance person needs to make a decision about outsourcing or doing it in-house. Okay, so just the other day, a furnace went down in the West Wing at our facility. And so I told the maintenance, go check it out. So he looked at it, couldn't figure out what was wrong. So I came in, I looked at it, couldn't figure out what was wrong. I said, forget it, we're not going to spend half the day trying to get this furnace run. I'm calling the HVAC guy, okay? So I think in just about every organization, there comes a point where you got to call somebody in if the problem gets bad enough. If he doesn't have help with that, he might spend half the day trying to fix this furnace and still not get anywhere and waste a lot of time. Okay, I think I made my point there. Let's keep moving on. The fourth tip, manage maintenance work separate from building construction and renovation. This is a lesson I think at Faith Builders we learned the hard way. Building construction and renovation projects, bigger projects, when you're adding on another wing or totally remodeling the dining hall or whatever, it seems to fit with maintenance, but it actually doesn't. And you're much better off having a completely different crew do that kind of work and keep your maintenance man doing that daily list that I talked to you about. The simple reason why it doesn't work is because renovation projects are extremely demanding and they will take all the time you got. Well, if the maintenance man is doing that, he's not doing maintenance. He's doing construction. And those aren't the same thing. Now, that's not to say that you as the manager or even the maintenance man himself shouldn't have a little say or involvement in the construction project, because how things are constructed really does influence maintenance in the long run. And so I think construction should be done with maintenance in mind, but it shouldn't be the maintenance man's priority job to do the construction. Now, there may be exceptions to this in very small organizations and maybe smaller projects. These kind of things can be fit in. But I found for us, when we think of a renovation project, it's a totally different crew. I try to keep the maintenance man out of the project. I try to keep him doing maintenance because that is just as important. The fifth tip, design improvements to reduce future maintenance work and cost. I already alluded to this. When you go ahead and build something or change something or add something new, just simply think about what it's going to take to maintain this. And if you're your why is there, you can reduce maintenance. That's the whole idea. I know that many of our organizations have volunteers, and so we can think of that as cheap labor and, well, who cares about how much? Well, that's kind of true, but not totally. I think, I told you we're in the middle of a renovation project. So there's a couple of decisions we're making right now that I'm thinking maintenance. One of them is lighting. So we have this cathedral ceiling stairwell that we're building. There's lights way up there on the ceiling. I think, how's a guy ever going to get up there on the stepladder and change those bulbs? Okay, so we're going to go with LED lights because they don't need to be changed for 20 years. At least that's what they claim. Okay, so that little decision, I'm thinking future maintenance. Carpet in the hallway. We had a carpet contractor come in and give us a couple of prices and suggestions on things, and he recommended carpet squares. It doesn't come on a roll. It comes, and he said the biggest advantage, he said, colleges love this for their maintenance department. If you get a spill or something tears up the carpet or it starts to fray, you just peel up one square and put another one down just in that area. And he said, you can buy a few extra squares. I'll give you some extra glue and your maintenance man can do it. Well, that's great. That's not less work, but it enables us to do more of our maintenance in-house and save money. Okay? So I'm making a change to our facility, and I'm thinking about future maintenance. I love drop ceiling tiles as a maintenance person, right? So we're making a decision about this recently in our part that we're renovating, and people were saying, well, I like the look of a drywall. See, this looks too institutional and all of that. And I said, okay, well, we'll compromise. There's a couple bedrooms here. We'll put a drywall ceiling in. But right here, look at those heating pipes. Look at those wiring junction boxes. I'm putting drop ceiling in here. I don't care what anybody says, because drop ceiling is the kind of thing that a maintenance man can pop that up, slide it aside. He can do what he needs to do. And if there's a water leak and you get water spots all over it, pop the tile out, go down to the shop, grab a few more squares, plug them in, and we're done. Any maintenance man I've ever had can repair a drop ceiling, but most of my maintenance men were not very good at repairing drywall ceilings, okay? once you get a messed up drywall ceiling, you have a specialty job on your hands, all right? Those are some examples of how you do maintenance work with future maintenance in mind. Now, I should maybe add this. There's a place I did mention this idea of volunteer labor and how that changes the equation a bit, because your biggest cost in doing maintenance might be the materials, not the labor. So should we use this high-end synthetic oil in the backup generator that lengthens our service interval? So we can service after, 1,000 hours instead of just 500 hours. Well, you're going to be putting more money into the oil. And you have to think, okay, well, the change in the oil is my maintenance man. It won't take him all that long, and we're not paying him very much. So let's go with the cheaper oil and do it oftener. I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, but I'm just explaining a way where sometimes you need to think, well, maybe we can do more maintenance work for less cost. And that's if your workers are volunteer. All right, the next one. Conduct routine building inspections. At Faith Builders, we call these walkthroughs. Any of you do this at your place where you set aside one or two people and you just walk through the building or a section of the building and just look for things? Look for things that need to be done. This is hard to do, actually. There never seems to be time for this. But I have found them to be really valuable, and I think it's good for somebody in the maintenance department and maybe somebody outside the department to do this on a routine interval. We do it primarily for safety reasons because we're a school and we have a lot of children and students, and our insurance company recommended it. In fact, they even gave us a little checklist to use for it. But it's very interesting what all you come up with when, in the course of a day, you're not actually doing maintenance. You're stepping back from that and you're just walking through the building looking for things that need to be done. And like I said, in our case, the walkthroughs are particularly safety walkthroughs. So we're looking for trip and fall hazards, and we're looking for, 15 extension cords plugged into one outlet and things like that. but we often notice other things, a smashed section of drywall that I hadn't noticed before, a couple holes that need patched, or a carpet that's going threadbare or something else that needs attention. These are really good things to if your list starts running low, you need to do a walkthrough. You'll find a lot of things to add to it. Most of our walkthroughs end up the dozen or more things get added to the list. And so in some ways, if you're already feeling far behind, it's hard to do these kind of things. But going way back to what I said at the beginning, this kind of thing shows that you care about your facility. And you're not just going to fly by the seat of your pants and only do what's most urgent and only do what people scream about. You're going to actually be strategic and look for things that need done before they're getting too bad. All right? So however you want to do this, like I said, we just do it annually. You might want to do it oftener than that. And how many people you want to involve, usually two or three is plenty. Take a clipboard, a blank sheet of paper, or make yourself your own little checklist. Walk through your building from one end to the other and look for things that need to be done. The next tip, track maintenance expenses for budgeting and cost saving. I'm not going to go deep into this one because everybody's systems are different in how they keep their books and things, but I just know at Faith Builders, it is really valuable to me to know exactly how much I'm spending on maintenance repairs in a lot of different categories. And we use QuickBooks, and so it makes nice little reports. I know at any given time for the year, for last year, or for the last 5 years, how much I've spent just on automotive expenses, or on HVAC, or the water system, or the sewage treatment system. Or just, I have a category called building and hardware. It's just all the stuff that you get to fix the gutter or the drywall or whatever. So I'm watching those expenses, and we use those. We use the history over the last 5 years to make a budget for the next year. So I already know how much I expect to spend just in the HVAC category for the next year, and I'm watching that. Occasionally, I'm going into the books and looking at it or asking for reports, and if I see that we're getting close to the end of the year and I'm already spent more than the budget said, then I know to look back in the expenses and look for where is this going. And then I might notice that a certain thing is happening where this money is going into. Right now, as we speak, I know that already our fiscal year goes until July. So we're a little over halfway through the year, and I already know that I overspent my budget for the automotive account. Now, a budget is a goal, so I'm allowed to overspend to a certain point at least. I might have some people asking me now what's going on here. I better be able to defend it. But when I see that across the line, I start going back and saying, where is this money going? And maybe we're putting too much money into old vehicles and need to upgrade, or maybe we're spending in some other area. But keep track of your expenses in whatever way you're able to do that, and keep an eye on it. Maintenance is a way where it's easy to sink a lot of money into it without knowing it, because you tend to think of it in terms of, well, if something's broke, you're going to fix it. So you think only that is happening. Well, more than that can happen. And it's not like you're going to say, well, here we have a furnace that doesn't work. We've already spent more than we said, so we're just going to let it go. Well, no, you probably have to fix it. But still, if you keep track of that from year to year, it does help you to think about where your money is going and where you can save. Because I agree with you, there's just lots of places to either save or waste when we're doing our maintenance. And I think particularly because in a nonprofit, we tend to be using other people's money to do our job, we need to be very careful about this and make sure we're not wasting. The next tip. This is a little nitty-gritty one, and it's kind of one of my hobby horses probably. Label everything. I have learned in our maintenance department, you are best off. I've got one of those little brother type in labelers that spit out the sticky tape, and we stick stickers on all kinds of things. I also have one of those little engravers that you can actually write on metal. I've got a couple colors of paint pens. And so just a host of things. I mean, you go to drive one of our vans, and right there on the visor is a label that gives the driver a checklist of things they're supposed to remember to do and not do. You go down in our boiler room, and right there on the control panel is some instructions printed for oiling the circulator motors and at what interval and what kind of oil to use. And you go over to the water system, and right there at the little tap, there's a label that says this is where you draw the raw water sample for the water tester. And just on and on and on. Couple reasons why labeling is important. For one, if you've got an organization where a lot of people are living and working, a label just lets everybody know the right way to use something, or the wrong way, or what to avoid. And if you label properly, you'll keep things from, you'll keep people from misusing things, and you'll have less maintenance. But also, in most of our organizations, we have maintenance helpers that change over. At Faith Builders, I have one, sometimes two maintenance volunteers. It's a 1 year term of service. So every year I get a new maintenance man. Well, if things are well labeled, that helps a lot, because I don't have to just verbally explain everything, and visually they can see, oh, I better not do that, or oh, here's what he was talking about, but where you tap the raw water sample. So label everything. Get one of those little labels. Use it a lot. Put instructions on things. Even label, one thing that's very handy for is labeling shop tools. I don't know if tools walk away from your shop or not, but shops are places where tools can grow appendages and start crawling and walking and flying even sometimes. And you're looking for a tool, you don't know where it is, and you find it in the neighbor's garage. But anyway, labeling things so that they know who owns it and where to return it is handy for some things. Here's one of my favorites, the battery booster pack. So we have 80 students come for winter term. It's the dead of winter. They pull their car in, they set it in the parking lot. It sits there for 5 weeks while multiple times the temperature goes below zero. So after 5 weeks, they hop in their car to go home. So we actually have two battery booster packs in our shop. But my pet peeve is somebody uses the battery booster pack and brings it back and sets it on the shelf. Well, it's half drained by now. So right on the battery booster pack. Please charge before returning to shelf. Anyway, label everything. You get the point. Last point, keep your shop, garage, and storage areas clean and organized. I have become a stickler for neatness, and I think sometimes I annoy people with it. But I tell you what, here's a little story. I'm not even going to tell you where this is because it's a well-known Mennonite nonprofit. I visited there recently, drive in there, nice paved parking lot, line stripes for the parking. You go into the foyer, immaculate foyer, administrative offices over here. Everything's neat as a pin. I'm walking through the whole place and looking around. I go to the shop and it is a mess. I couldn't even walk through it. There's just piles of junk, tools laying everywhere, vehicles pulled in here and there. And it doesn't make sense to me. Why would you keep some places of your why would you believe in neatness and organization in some places of your organization, but not in the maintenance shop? Somehow we have this disconnect, and I know that the maintenance is not the main office, and that's okay. Shop can get messy sometimes, but I have this little rule. There needs to be a place for everything and everything in its place. And it is possible to do that in a maintenance shop. Just before I left here, I looked at the shop, and there's some things laying on the workbench and a few things sitting on the floor. But at routine intervals, I ask the maintenance man, look, spend the last half hour today just cleaning up the shop. Sweep the floor, put the tools back, clear the workbench top. I like to have it looking like that. I think it tells something, not just to people that come in, but it tells something to my maintenance man. You can't do good work when things are a mess, whether you're in maintenance or anything else. And so be careful about this. Don't underestimate what it does. See, order in an organization is actually connected to morale. When things are well cared for and they're in order, people feel better about their work. Okay? And that's true in maintenance, just like it's true in all other kinds of work. So try to do your best to have order in the shop. Have places for things. Label them, like I said. Routine cleanups. Get it worthwhile to spend some time cleaning up the shop. That's not a waste of time. If you need to get better shelving or cubby holes or bins to keep things in, get them. Make things organized. Clean that place out. The shop is what I call plop zone, okay? Every organization has plop zone. It's this place everybody knows about that if you don't know what to do with something, that's where you plop it, okay? And then it stays there for the next 5 years until somebody gets tired of it and puts it in the dumpster, okay? Don't let the shop be the plop zone. You might need one somewhere. We have one way in the back basement. We call it the rat hole. That's plop zone. But even plop zone needs to be gone through every couple of years and say, why in the world do we save this? Old copper pipe, let's recycle it. okay? So be aware of your plop zones around your organization. Go through them regularly. It's okay to have a place to kind of stash things, but don't just ignore it for forever and forever, and don't let the shop be plop zone, okay? So those are my tips. Hopefully you can find a way to make them practical to the place where you work, and hopefully they're something that that's helpful to you. In closing, I'd just like to share an idea that I've been thinking a lot more about. There's an irony in maintenance, and it's what makes maintenance work actually hard for me. I like to be important, and I like to be noticed. But you know what? When it comes to maintenance, the better job you do, the less you're noticed. Is that right? So for a red-blooded American male, that doesn't go down too good. I like to walk up the hallway, set the stepladder right in the middle, jangle my tool belt as I'm going up there, and make people go around me so they know I'm doing maintenance, right? But if I'm doing my job right, less goes wrong. And the maintenance department, I think the maintenance department needs to be like a window pane, okay? It's a very important piece of your building, but unless it's broken or dirty, you don't see it. You see through it, right? So I'm starting to think differently about maintenance. I'm saying, okay, it's okay if it's not noticed. It's okay if it's not making a big fuss or a big noise or a lot of dust. In fact, it's better if we don't. Let's try to do our maintenance as quietly as possible so people hardly notice. Because that's just a distraction. And if I'm doing my job right, people won't even know what's going on a daily basis because it's just going to be ticking. It's going to be working. But I'm warning you, that's hard because you're taking the back seat. You're being unseen in your service. But we need to remember what Jesus said. There are people that set the stepladder in the middle of the hallway and jangle the tool belt. And Jesus said they have their reward, right? So he's seeing what we're doing behind the scenes, and he knows how important it is, even if the whole rest of the people don't even have a clue, that if you wouldn't be doing this every day and paying attention to it, this place would fall apart. So aim for a transparent maintenance department, like a window pane. Keep it clean. Don't let it break so people can see through it. It's doing its job, but it's not being seen. Okay, that's all I have to share. I'd like to just open it up for a little bit of Q&A. I think we have a minute or two yet?
2 minutes.
Okay, that's not a lot of time to discuss. Anybody want to throw out a question or add something?
I really like your idea about having whoever brings up a maintenance issue have them put their name with it. I have a whiteboard in my office.
Okay.
And the ladies just come in there and scribble something up there, mm-hmm. and nobody can make any sense out of it. You have no clue where it's at.
Yeah. So the whiteboard is your version of the list that I'm
doing.
Yeah, good.
Right now. But
yeah.
I am working on a maintenance book for my maintenance guys because we have two. Mm-hmm. They come for a year.
Okay.
The maintenance man that comes last is the underdog.
Okay, so he gets trained in by the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he moves up to become the
main. So they overlap.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And,
mm-hmm.
Yep. Question, what do you do when someone comes to be a maintenance man and he knows so little about maintenance that you wonder, why in the world did you volunteer?
Yeah, I think sometimes people think of maintenance as what you do if you're not skilled at anything else.
Or would rather do that than go take care of old people or handicapped children.
Well, I tell you that there's really, I think you got two simple options. You're either going to have to take the time to train them in and you know, sometimes I have to do more of that than I want to, but I try to have a sense of fulfillment in teaching. So I know that this guy's going to go home and he's going to be a better husband someday just because now he knows how to do a few things. But that takes time and energy that you don't have time for. Yeah. The other simple option is to screen harder. You just have to say, look, this is a critical job. I need somebody with at least a few skills. I mean, we would do the same thing with nursing or anything else. And I just think you just have to say, look, I want to know what you're skilled in. What is it? I mean, is it, do you have some electrical experience or construction, or do you like to fix motors? If none of the above, well, you might not be the right guy for this job. I'm sorry, but.
Well, if you're desperate for help.
Well, is it help?
About all the tough ones, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, you're right. Is it really help?
Yeah.
I really appreciate your pointers here. I needed to hear a lot of this. I really did.
I would suggest about the whiteboard, one thing that's good about the list is to make it more accessible. Mm-hmm. For people, I don't know where your office is, and maybe, but put that, for us, it's on the computer, so it's really easy for everybody to access. But if it's going to be something like a clipboard or a whiteboard, put it somewhere where people go by regularly and they don't have to go way out of their way, because then they'll be more likely to put things on there.
Well, my office is the flop zone.
Okay.
Sort of.
Okay.
Yeah, but they just come in there daily. The mailboxes okay.
Good.
Are there.
Well, then that's the right place for it. Yeah. So, yeah. If it's central. Yeah, that's good. Okay, I think we're just about out of time. So I'll be around the rest of today and tomorrow. If you want to touch base with me one-on-one and ask more questions or dialogue, I'd be very open to that. So thanks for coming, and thanks for your attention. God bless.
What is your Microsoft?
SharePoint. Yeah. It's actually a program that we use for a lot of different things. The maintenance list is just one of them. It has a organizational calendar on it. It has like an announcement board where anybody can put announcements up. And then anybody, it's web-based, but right now it's an in-house web page, so it's not on the World Wide Web, but it opens with Microsoft Internet Explorer.
I think he's going to have a word or two.
Thank you, Sheldon.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.